The Washington Post article, July 28th, said complications of Regan's wounds are disclosed, and it tells how the doctors revealed a certain story at the time, but it was much more serious, and a lung collapsed, and he had a high fever, and it was worrisome, and chills, and there was fluid in the lung. One article I have from the San Jose Mercury, Regan, after surgery, faced new medical crisis. And they refer to that mysterious and persistent high fever that caused some of his doctors to think further surgery was necessary. Then the article says there were a couple of gatherings of consultants. The dilemma was an obvious one because no one was sure of the turn, the cause of the bad turn. That they range from optimistic to worried, and nobody knew why he got worse or what was behind it. Then the article has a description of his second medical crisis, how it came up, how the temperature was up to 102, how the white blood cell count went up, and they weren't, as I say, they weren't sure what happened, and it describes the concern of all those around of him that maybe he'd need more surgery, even though they told us that he was doing all right and passing these little notes back and forth. Then the San Francisco Chronicle, this was the San Jose Mercury. The San Francisco Chronicle has a picture of Ronald Regan, and many of you saw it, some of you might not, of July 24th, the first official photo after the shooting. A reporter said it had been cropped to leave out a nurse at Regan's left. And it goes in again to the mysterious and persistent fever, the high fever caused, and that the president was sicker than we generally have known, and that the first picture showed him smiling in a robe with his wife, but they cropped out a picture of the nurse, and there was a device connected to his chest coming out from under the robe. Now, this goes into the doctors operating on him and asking the FBI the caliber of the bullet, and they were told by the Secret Service, the FBI, it was a .38. Then later, they kept saying, what was it? And later, the story was revised, and they said it was a .22. Now, back in April, shortly after the shooting, on a broadcast I did with Ray Fabrizio, we talked about the .38 caliber and later saying the .22. But that wasn't just on the street where they were talking about weapons, a .38 or .22. That's where the Secret Service and the police were talking about this before the surgery. They were talking about the discrepancy, and now it seems even in the operating room. And the San Francisco Chronicle talks again about the white blood count going up and the fever, suggesting that he possibly had pneumonia. They didn't know what he had, but they thought maybe he had pneumonia. Now, the Houston Post had the identical article that was covered in the San Francisco Chronicle and part of it in the Washington Post, except for one paragraph which was left out of the other newspapers. And that's why it's so important, if you have the time or money, to read as many papers as you can. They showed the picture of him smiling, holding on to his wife, and they said it was cropped, and that there was a nurse next to him, and that there was a sac device in his chest coming out from under his robe. He looked fine and dandy, and he was very sick. And they talked about the difference in the caliber bullet and the critical misinformation that had been given by the FBI. But here's the paragraph that was in the Houston Post that was left out from the other articles. It said, in a security lapse, a medical voyeur, a doctor with no business being there, wandered up to Regan's bedside and stared intently at the president for a time. He refused to leave and had to be escorted away by hospital security police. Now, I remember when Herbert Kalmbach took Martha Mitchell to a hospital down near San Diego at the time of Watergate, and Steve King, chief of security for the Watergate conspirators, later went on to the Department of Agriculture. I don't know where he is now, had injected Martha Mitchell with a shot, and I believed at that time, and I've said before, that she would get that notorious Jack Ruby cancer. There are instances in Chile that I've talked about and named the drug where a person is injected with a drug and then released from prison, and then the kidneys shrivel up 3 years later. We know there was a security lapse at the Hilton Hotel. How in the world was there a security lapse or a medical voyeur? Who was the doctor? Who had to be taken away? Who was standing over this man? Because when you're in major surgery like that, you are unconscious. How did he get in there, and why haven't we heard about him before? And why did we just hear from the Houston post about this. I think it's interesting because I have a lot of suspicions on the prognosis of Ronald Reagan in the future, and there's a lot of newspaper articles building up Alexander Haig and George Bush, and Reagan is very quiet and staying home. We don't know how sick he is now. If they lied about it before and they told us how well he was, we have no medical reports. We don't get a report of his physical condition. He could still be critically ill. He could still have that extra raising of white cells they talk about. He could still have the possible infection. As a matter of fact, there was an expose of oil in food over in Spain, right next to the army base over there. It was in the Wall Street Journal, July 13th. Spain's cabinet to probe edible oil fraud that led to 62 deaths in food poisoning. And it refers to a kind of an oil that was put in the food oil, and that people confused the diagnosis. First they thought it was birds or vegetables that were sprayed, and then they thought it was pneumonia. They diagnosed it as an untypical pneumonia. There was a material called colza oil, C-O-L-Z-A, a toxic material used for lubricating, a lubricating oil. And when it's put in with other substances, such as water, it gives what they call an untypical pneumonia. And at the time that there were these deaths and these illnesses in Spain, it was right near American base, 8,400 people were hospitalized, and 62 died, and we still don't know the effects of that. The diagnosis at the time was untypical pneumonia, and I read in the Washington Post and the Houston Post that they thought he had an unusual pneumonia. So in the water, you can't taste it. Is it possible that the president will have complications later? I don't think we can rule that out. And, of course, the major media, nobody would link it to a plan to kill him that went back in March, because the American people think you'd have to shoot somebody to die or there's no other conspiracy going. But anybody who studies these medical problems or the CIA or the things that are being tested around the world knows there's a lot of ways to skin a cat and there's a lot of ways to kill people. The San Francisco Examiner this week and other papers had a very comforting article, an investigation by the FBI. John Hinckley Jr. acted alone. I know you'll all feel relieved. They went through all these documents and papers, and there was no conspiracy to shoot Ronald Reagan, and the country is safe. They've got the one man, and that's going to be the FBI report. They came to that conclusion as soon as they found a letter to Jody Foster in his hotel room. The FBI doesn't really have to work and collect thousands of papers to support their reports. They have instant solutions, and everything that they get falls into what they said was their solving the crime within minutes of the shooting. So John Hinckley acted alone, and they said they had tremendous lengths to cover anything, and they knew that it would arise again, the subject would rise again. This was in the Houston Post, July 27th. Mr. Young of the FBI went to tremendous lengths to cover anything that would tend to incriminate or indicate a conspiracy so that when historians look at the event, there will be a firm basis to preclude later questions that could arise. We learned this lesson from many other assassination attempts in which questions did arise later. Well, questions arise, but they don't answer them. So for historians for future use, in case you're wondering about Hinckley, he did it alone, and everything is calm in Washington. Reagan isn't nervous anymore, and you can rest assured they have the lone gunman. As far as the Pope goes, there was an article in the Los Angeles Times, "The Pope's Assailant Remains an Enigma," by David Wiley. And they go into the psychological investigation of this assailant, Muhammad Aja. They said that Dr. Ovidio had a psychological profile of him, a psychological puzzle, a paranoid, a schizophrenic, a religious fanatic with a history of epilepsy in childhood, submerged in tawdry waters of madness. That's over in Italy. That's that one-minute motor epilepsy that Jack Ruby had, where they have hundreds of thousands of dollars like Ruby can handle, mob money, his pocket bulging with money, money to overthrow Fidel Castro, working with organized crime, and the Genovese family that was mentioned by one of the witnesses before the Warren Commission. They don't talk about the minute epilepsy that killed the Turkish journalist or how the police opened the door to let him out dressed as a military man when he left Turkey, and then goes out and does some other assassinations and takes tours in Spain. He didn't have any epilepsy as he traveled around the world in Interpol, and nobody picked him up with his epileptic seizures. But they have convinced themselves that they have a lunatic over there. One person commenting on the trial, the quick trial of the Pope's assailant, said, "I'm convinced there was much more that could have been done in this trial. By questioning witnesses who knew Aja, a quite different impression would have emerged. He likes to play the fanatic, but he's not really like that at all." So somebody was concerned that the people that knew him didn't come forward, and I am sure the people that know John Hinckley Jr. are not going to come forward. Members of the Nazi Party in Illinois or California or North Carolina or Houston or Lubbock, Texas, were going on with that lone assassin, and everything will be covered up for the Pope's attempted murder or Reagan's attempted murder, and that's the way it goes. Now, last week, I've talked many times about the Wells Fargo money and Harold Smith, and last week there was a charge in the embezzlement case of Harold Smith. He's changed his name back to Ross Fields, for taking $21 million from the Wells Fargo Bank. Now, he said it was $200 to $300 million that they used his account, and they used Ben Lewis and Gene Kawakami, and he claims that this was not a $21 million theft, that he was the fall guy for operations that involved many more people and a lot of money. Now, just a few weeks ago, there was a front page picture of the San Francisco Examiner and Chronicle, the 14th floor of the Tishman Building in San Francisco. The Wells Fargo files are burned. They were burned. That was the only area of the building that was on fire, and their special file offices, before they charged this poor man, Harold Smith, with this embezzlement. The files on the 14th floor of the Wells Fargo building were burned. Now, that's San Francisco. That's the main office of the Wells Fargo operation, the president and vice president. They were burned. And also, before he was charged with the embezzlement, July 31st, this came out, the vice president of Wells Fargo was stabbed. William Sink sunk. His name is William Sink, Wells Fargo vice president. And if you don't take the San Francisco Examiner, it wasn't important enough, or else I missed it, in the San Francisco Chronicle, even though it's one of the largest banks in San Francisco. This is the way this story says on the 25th. A San Francisco banker was stabbed to death in his Lake Merced apartment. The body of Wells Fargo vice president William Sink, 41, was discovered by a friend yesterday in the dead man's apartment. He was wearing night clothes. He lived alone, and according to Wells Fargo spokesman, the murder victim was a well-known and well-regarded executive who worked for the bank for a decade. Now, a decade is what Harold Smith says was the time period that this money was floating, this $200 to $300 million. He was recently promoted, Mr. William Sink, to the position of vice president and manager in charge of the merchant bank card program, an administrative position. So he was murdered, and the files were burned, and then another character died. He was slain that was involved with this. This all happened just the week before Harold Smith was indicted. This is from the San Francisco Examiner. Powerful Japan gangster slain and a reaction feared. You better believe that there's a reaction that's going to take place. As far back as February of this year, and this is August, Mr. Harold Smith said in the San Jose Mercury that he would blow open the bank embezzlement case, that it involved the Japanese mafia that were linked to the Wells Fargo embezzlement, that it was a scandal that will blow the case wide open. And he involved a lot of people. In fact, the manager of the Hollywood, or it's not the Hollywood, the Wilshire District Bank, and also the Hollywood Bank is missing $3.5 million that went to Tennessee, and the Marina Del Rey Bank is missing money. But Harold Smith is the fall guy. Kawakami, the manager of the Wilshire branch, has not been charged with any wrongdoing last February, but the allegations of Harold Smith were that he was linked to the Japanese mafia, and that this story involves a lot more money and the Japanese mafia. Well, getting back to the Tokyo death, the murder this week, just before Harold Smith was charged. There was a death in Japan, Tokyo. The police fear a new wave of bloodshed in the revival of the Japanese organized crime. They're prepared for violence because the head of the organized crime in Japan was murdered, and his death, Mr. Taoko Kazuo, Taoko, K-A-Z-U-O, T-A-O-K-A, T-A-O-K-A, Taoka, was murdered, and now they believe that this will spread to more deaths. And I would say if there were life insurance on Robert Besco right now after the death of Torrijos in the plane crash in Panama, somebody would collect a lot of money. I think Robert Vesco's in as much trouble as the head of the Japanese mafia. The police estimate the earnings of the gangs in Japan made $5 billion a year, $5 billion a year organized crime, 90% of it from illicit activity. And this fellow was murdered just before, the week before the indictment on Harold Smith, the head of the Japanese mafia and organized crime and the gun running and the drugs and head of the 20 major gangs of narcotics and so forth, which flow into California and in the Bay Area. The Japanese gangster, the chief of that group, was slain. And as I mentioned several weeks ago, the head of the Hong Kong organized crime that is linked to the narcotics of Southeast Asia and the Orient, to the Japanese mafia, he's missing. He's on the run. Torrijos is dead this week. The head of the Japanese mafia was slain, and the vice president of Wells Fargo Bank and the files of Wells Fargo were burned. So bring on Harold Smith and let him prove that he's innocent. After the evidence is destroyed, after the primary witnesses get bumped off, then they can begin their trial. And what can he do? You can't bring in these characters, and it's hard to make the connections. People are not making these connections, but they're very important, and one event leans on the other. Now, there are some other interesting deaths and large schemes that I'll go into later. I don't have time for the details now. One has to do with Houston, Texas, a death that took place last year. There were $8 million gone from two Houston investment companies. There was a trial of fraud, and the primary witness was killed. I've been talking for many, many months on missing millions of dollars. Several men have been suspected in the unsolved murder of a man named Bob Kahn, 29 years old, and it has to do with Memphis, Tennessee securities and a tax swindle and lots of money floating around. This is what we call the missing millions. This investigation is going on now in Houston on the loan schemes and the death of the primary witness in that case. There's also a large article that I'll analyze in a few weeks on the Chilean secret police. They're implicated in a 1.5 million bank heist, and there are murders involved in this and money going out of Chile. And again, this has to go with DINA, the secret police, at a time where many of them are being exposed in the news media and Pinochet and the assassination teams in Chile. There's a large article in the Washington Post, July 23rd. There's been several articles on this. The Chilean secret police implicated in 1.5 million bank heists, and it has to do with the murder of several people. Another investigation in Los Angeles described in the L.A. Times. You have to get a cross-section. One's a Houston paper, one's a Los Angeles Times. The other is the Washington Post. Probe tears at bank's low profile, and this has to do with a bank that is it's the Garfield Bank in Los Angeles, laundering money, the Cayman Islands, the death of an attorney, Nathan Markowitz, who was murdered. It has to do with Panama, Liberia, the Bank of Bermuda, sham corporations, narcotics traffic, the Cayman Islands, and even money that went into various politicians in California, such as Governor Brown and Merv Dimely, and various officials in California. The head of the bank that has this bank is being indicted. And again, a lot of missing money, bank cover-ups in the islands down in the Bahamas, people from Beverly Hills, attorney from Beverly Hills and Las Vegas, and interlocking links of the Garfield Bank and laundering of U.S. illicit narcotics profits. There's a big investigation, fraud conviction for three. This is the Houston Post. And this has to do with the meteoric rise and fall of a former Dallas Cowboy football player and his partner and a Houston security firm. And this, again, has to do with laundered money and Houston commodities. And it crosses over to Pittsburgh, Florida, Tennessee, Blue Cross of Tennessee, Ohio, West Virginia, Illinois. This covers a lot of bases. And again, this Bob Kahn is dead. Their overseas investments, gold investments, $8 million is missing and laundered. And there's a scandal in France of political murders, a pro-Gaullist right-wing group, and a whole series of murders in Marseille. And I'm sure that, again, this is going to link to the French connection and the narcotics traffic that is increasing again from Turkey down to Marseille. Next week, I do want to go into the Dominica story again, the Dominica invasion, because so many characters are important that are related to events that I've been talking about recently. But one of the men who is out on appeal, who was supposed to overthrow Dominica, who's the imperial wizard of the Knights of the Ku Klux Klan, was objecting to his being tied up in the appeals on this because he's appealing his conviction on the possibility of taking over that island to have German propaganda and literature and Nazi gun running and so forth. But he had a little demonstration down in Birmingham, Alabama, and he doesn't like to be held up. He likes to be out there demonstrating against the blacks with the Klan, and he feels that he should be let off the hook from the Dominican affair so that he can continue his racism down in Birmingham. And again, the papers this last week, Vesco ordered deported. He's a smart cookie, Robert Vesco. He's out of the Bahamas, and I believed and mentioned that his name came up in terms of the Dominica invasion plan, that that would be a safe haven for him for gun running, narcotics, and operations. Vesco is out sailing around the sea. The Dominica plan failed through. The Grand Dragon wants to demonstrate and burn, his crosses down in Birmingham, Alabama. He's being inhibited on his right to demonstrate and harass the blacks down there. And, of course, all of those people linked to high officials in the U.S. government and the CIA and want to get on with their racism and their activities down in the Caribbean, close to where the action will be as General Haig tries to take over that Caribbean area. And finally, in the last few minutes, I want to talk about another financier whose name is in the news this week. I talked about David Murdoch from Los Angeles and Richard Mellon Scaife last week, the Mellon family funding the New Right and the New Right organizations. The Wall Street Journal has an article, "New half-owner of Fox Film is identified as secret commodities trading firm." Now, I don't have time in the remaining 5 minutes to go into too many details, but there's an operation going on right in Pebble Beach in California, where also Richard Mellon Scaife owns property, and Edward Bennett Williams is the attorney for Marvin Davis, the man that just bought Fox Studio, and the Pebble Beach organization. Put Henry Kissinger on the board, and Gerald Ford, and there's Madame Chenault, the Flying Tigers, and Grace Kelly, Rainier, the High Society gang, close friends of Frank Sinatra's. Now, at the time that 20th Century Fox was purchased and Pebble Beach was purchased, there was a secret name that didn't come out, and it just surfaced this week. It's the Rico Corporation. It's Mark Rich, the Netherlands Antilles base, and the Wall Street Journal describes him as highly secretive, previously unidentified, involved with commodity trading firm, a risky, shadowy person in the shadowy world of buying and selling crude oil with offices in New York City. Marvin Davis from Denver, Colorado, and Mark Rich have been partners in other activities, some oil exploration and other ventures. Now, the Wall Street Journal uses the word secretive twice and other ventures which they don't identify. Rich is described as closed mouth. He has tens of millions of dollars involved in any single telephone call, high-powered circles, more secretive than most people, rarely speaks to the press, and rarely answers questions. This is the partner of Marvin Davis, who has purchased this area, a big hunk of this area, the Pebble Beach. And Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney for Marvin Davis, who purchased this area, the partner of this Rich, is the attorney for John Hinckley Jr., the man that tried to kill Ronald Reagan. And Reagan, as I say, may still die of these wounds and the hospitalization or the treatment following the surgery. Now, the ownership details of this secretive organization, it's described in the Wall Street Journal July 29th as secretive. Organization is a company called TFC Holding Incorporated. It's a new company. I'd love to know when it was formed and if any of that money came from the $55 million of the CIA that was missing from the Nukenham Bank. It may not, but I think we have a right to know where the money comes from. With Edward Bennett Williams on and Gerald Ford and Henry Kissinger and these people linked, it would be nice to know. The TFC Holding Corporation bought Fox Studio for $722 million, and they broke it down into two classes, Class A and Class B. And I'll go into the complicated arrangement and the purchase of 20th Century Fox. Mr. Davis put up $50 million cash. The TFC Holding Company, which presumably is Richco, put up $50 million, and the Wall Street Journal says it's not clear where it came from, and then put up another $72 million, and they got a credit of $550 million to buy Pebble Beach and all that beautiful area around here and 20th Century Fox. Now, this is kind of cute. The seven banks putting up the money, one Canadian bank described, as I say, as secretive. And Aetna Life Insurance from Connecticut is going to put up some of the money to help them with their building in Los Angeles to reestablish their property. They're going to move the Fox Studios and relocate. Now, Mr. Reach, or the Ricoh Corporation, is an interesting group in the commodities market. And they're involved in a group called Minerals and Chemicals, Engelhard Corporation Minerals and Chemicals. And I would like to know also, because of the lawyer in common and the personalities in common with certain crises in Washington, if it has anything to do with Vanderbilt Energy or Vanderbilt Resources, the Hinckley family chemicals and resources with money from overseas, not yet identified, or where their interconnecting links are. I don't have time this week to go into great detail, but I do want to go into that because it affects us out here as this group move west. When they're referred to as secretive, you have to begin wondering who is coming in and taking over. And when you see the cast of characters, you get a pretty good idea of who they are. And you wonder how they operate and get such big loans of $550 million loan to buy up the area and who they're going to sell it to, what countries, what's going on in the Netherlands and Antilles. Is this organized crime that's going to take over the whole area? Are these the assassination teams? I certainly know that Kissinger, Ford, and Edward Bennett Williams are. Edward Bennett Williams, the attorney for Robert Vesco and John Connolly, and the former assassination teams, Richard Helms of the CIA. A lot of changes will take place in our area, just as they took place. I saw Beverly Hills. I was brought up there, born down there, and saw that city changed tremendously. When money comes in and crime money comes in and the hoodlums recognizes the high society move in, the whole character and the tone changes. The place is sold out, lock, stock, and barrel. So we do have a dangerous situation here, and there are also people at an international level and a national level that I've been studying and watching, and it's interesting the way they're going to move and operate. So I will go into that a little more next week. Well, these names keep weaving in and out of the era from the early 50s up to the present, but they are being exposed, and many of their people are being done in, like Torrijos, or the head of the gang in Japan, or the vice president of Wells Fargo. So we'll keep you up with it and the latest intrigues and the way they're doing each other in to cover their bases. That's the main thing. That's what they're doing, and that's what the news is full of. I'll be back with you next week. This is Mae Brussel in Carmel, and you take care until next week.
This has been World Watchers International with noted conspiracy investigator Mae Brussel. This program originates from Carmel, California.
KLRB, Carmel, Monterey.